Welcome to Pauly Malignaggi. From Brooklyn to the world.
Proudly representing his hometown of Brooklyn, New York.
Pauly Malignaggi takes you inside the ring and beyond.
I'm definitely far from shy. We're going to be ranting about a lot of stuff. Not just about boxing. I'm opinionated on life in general. Many sports topics and politics.
Pauly doesn't hold back.
The two-time world champion, Pauly the Magic Man.
Pauly Malignaggi, Peter Cards, Brooklyn to the world. We're back better than ever. We're episode number. We're going to have to go with Seth because the numbers are getting too high for Peter Cards. Where are we at?
This is
at?
An easy one.
What is it, Peter Cards? 60?
6-0.
Yeah. All of a sudden, now you're keeping count.
Yeah. Even numbers better.
Well, you weren't. You get the even numbers better. Were you at 58 and 56 and 54, dipshit? Huh? You weren't there for that one, right?
Survey says. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, you got it.
All right, so we're at episode number 60. What are we doing this week? Are we doing one or two episodes? What are we doing?
We'll play it by ear. We'll
I don't know. I don't know if we have time to do this.
I don't think
right?
so. It's already like tough. 9 o'clock
it's
at night.
It's Pete's wedding week.
Yeah.
We got announced. We made the announcement with the fight. Lots going on this week. Lots going on. Peter turned 34 years old. The big 3-4. Is that a thing? The big 3-4? Is it? Or
absolutely
is it,
not.
No. It's just like a big.
It fell on the same day of my wedding rehearsal. So all the attention was on church and getting everybody in line and
boom.
Making me feel old, man. I was 34 in 2004.
Wow, 34, you are an old piece of shit.
I am an old piece of shit.
Wow, what's with the sour grapes? I mean, like, what is that? What is with you guys? I walk in and
relax,
I sense some tension.
You're old too. You're older than me.
All right, bro. I'm 35. Relax.
Yeah, he's still fighting. Now look at you. Yeah. What are you fighting? You're fighting the refrigerator.
So we officially signed the fight. We gave you guys a heads up on the podcast last week. Oh, you guys love us on the podcast, and we give you guys
inside
like the heads up.
Scoop.
The inside scoop, we'll call it. You know, we gave you guys the inside scoop. At least on my fight, we gave you the inside scoop. We told you. Was going to be announced. This was going to come out, and boom! It's been announced in the last couple of days officially. Me and Gabriel Bracero will fight on the Leo Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton on the card. A lot of support on Twitter, right? I mean,
yes.
I got a lot of support on Twitter. A lot of the fans saying, you know, they're wishing me luck, and I really appreciate that. You know, they understand that, you know, it means something to me to go out on a winning note in Barclays Center. It's and really the appreciation is really heartfelt. I get that sense, and it's really appreciated on my end.
Back up. You said go out.
Well, go out as far as, you know, it's almost it, whether I fight again or not after this fight, I don't want to fight past 2016. So if I fight again or not after this fight, it may not be a Barclays Center. You know, right. That's never a guarantee. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of what I meant about the whole go out in a positive fashion in case I don't get to fight again at Barclays Center, or if I don't fight again in general. You know, I'd like to have a better opportunity to do it the right way, you know? Seth, before you rudely interrupted me, I was actually about to make a different point.
Whoa, sorry.
No,
my
but
bad.
Yeah. So that was.
I'm gonna leave. Now.
No. We don't want you to leave. We got love for Seth the Twin over here in the studio. Even though we're in Studio B today, what's up with Studio B? What's going on over here? We're like second rate citizens over here. No,
you changed the time on me.
What do you mean change the time? We've done 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock podcast. No,
I thought you were coming at 5, and you switched to 6. You're running late.
I don't know, bro. This is what I mean. We got Studio A. Our TVs barely work. We got Studio B now. We don't have a TV at all. We barely have a desk. This is looking like the studio down in Miami. this is like we're becoming like second rate citizens over here.
CBS is a major media company.
Nobody's here when I get in here. We don't. Pete Bailey has his Coronas on the table. Bailey, our pets' heads are falling off. I don't know what's going on anymore in this place.
I feel like Rosa Parks, like I'm in the back of the bus. You know?
At least we're not in the back of the bus, but we're in the back of the podcast studios. Is the equivalent of the podcast studio.
The mics work.
And I'm gonna put in a complaint. I guess I feel like one of these yuppies. You write letters. You know, like these yuppies. They write letters for everything. You know.
I think it's because I'm fat.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
You know what I noticed yesterday at your wedding rehearsal, though? I gotta be honest with you, Peter Cards. You know, it's because we're best friends and we're honest with each other. And Seth, you know, Matt, you're in the circle of trust, so you can listen to this too.
Yes.
You know, I gotta be honest. As I watched your wedding rehearsal yesterday, and then we had everybody over at the house, and where everybody was chilling, it was a celebration of your birthday and the fact that you're getting married this week. It was a jovial setting. I was looking at Gaby, the general gambler. I was looking at Giancarlo, our friend, the DJ.
Right.
One of two friends we have, Giancarlo, that are DJs.
Right.
I was looking at, obviously, your wife-to-be, Alyssa.
Right.
I was looking at, Helen, your sister-in-law. You know?
Go ahead.
And I was saying, everybody lost weight for the wedding. Everybody lost weight for the wedding.
Gaby and Giancarlo?
Gaby and Giancarlo was skinnier.
Giancarlo has always been the same weight.
Okay. Giancarlo's off.
Gaby?
What the Gaby lost weight. Gaby's skinnier.
Gaby was scoffing down ice cream.
I know, but he still lost weight. Maybe he's going to put it back on for the summer. Where was the effort for your wedding, cuz? Where was the effort?
Somebody's got to make the bring the bread home, you know?
Yeah. That was, what do you want to do?
What do you think I'm doing?
You're bringing the bread home and you're eating it too?
Yes. That's the point.
That's the problem. I didn't know
I was supposed to give it out. I didn't bring the bread home.
Sure,
I ate it.
Dip it in sauce. You do have a point, right?
It's called carbs.
Yeah.
You want to stay away from those.
Yeah.
They'll like, though. You can go on a 2-day cleanse.
A two-day cleanse, right? Or do I was going to say colonoscopy, but we don't want to do a colonoscopy. Colonics, right? We want to do a colonics for your wedding.
Like,
and
Keith
that loses
Thurman.
Like 5 pounds.
Keith Thurman
do that?
I heard
MMA fighters, they do that and they lose weight.
Yeah.
I might be reduced to doing that pretty soon. The way things are going for my weight and making weight. You know? Things are getting harder. It gets harder and harder at 35 years old.
What happens with your fight, though? Like, if you come in 48, you guys are still going to fight. Not to say you're going to do that.
We're coming 48. Hold on. We got an unknown call. We got an unknown call.
Let's
take it.
Hold on.
Yeah. Post, oh.
Speaker.
Come here, boss. What a posto. I call him boss.
I'm
a posto. Se bono.
Ah,
che bello, sono buono tu. Ah, io sempre buono sono io. Beh, boss, come sto dicendo. Poi, che tardo vengo a passare, ok? Rumano la pareure, passo. Ok?
Ok.
Noi se andiamo dopo.
Ciao, ciao.
Ci vediamo domani.
That's all. See?
Yeah, bravo.
I told him I'll talk to see him later. So, yeah, so what was I? Now I was interrupted by my grandfather. I'm losing track of.
You want to do colonics?
Colonics. That's what, not colonoscopy. Colonics. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, two different things.
To lose
weight. All right, so we want to do.
Keith Thurman did it.
I heard a lot of MMA fighters do it, and they lose weight too. I don't say I want to do it, but I might have no choice but to do it if things keep getting bad.
You've never done it before, right?
I've never done it, and
it's
I heard it's do you feel like a no Yousef moment? Like,
come on, there's something going up your ass. I mean,
I was living in LA, and this beautiful Ukrainian woman was doing it, and it was lovely. Yeah,
it was lovely. Until you saw it was coming out of her ass.
I saw it was coming out of my ass. Yeah, and it was
nice.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, you're an old bag of shit. Have you had a colonoscopy done too?
I had a colonoscopy as well.
Nice.
Do they do it like two in one? Is it like a two in one gig?
Colonoscopy is way worse.
Really? But you do it at the same time?
No. Two different things.
So two different offices, two different things?
Yeah.
I thought it was like you go to the same place. No. It was everything together.
Colonoscopy, they shove a camera up your ass.
Yeah, they want to see. They want to see everything on the inside. If you get it, you might get cancer,
right?
Colon cancer.
Yes. Oh, okay.
So that's, you know.
Colonoscopy.
Actually, you know, it's funny. My boss Ray had to do one yesterday for the first time. He turned 50, right? That's when people start 40,
yes.
50.
Yeah, yeah. How old are you? Me go. I need to go.
I've heard it was 40.
You're in your 50s, right?
50, aren't
you? Yeah, I'm 57.
I heard it was 40.
Right.
Peter called. You might have to do it at 40.
No,
I'll do it tomorrow. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. That's it. That's what I like to see.
Right before the
wedding. When you go, I'll go.
Yeah.
Unless I gotta go sooner for my weight class, no? To make weight? No. No, that's the other thing. That's the
two things.
What is the other thing? Why they sound so similar? They sound so similar.
Because they both have to do with your colon.
That's what it is.
AKA
okay.
Your bum hole.
Have you guys ever been put under?
Yes.
But put down. You have. It's weird, right?
What is it putting you put under?
Anesthesia.
Mika, you're talking to me? I used to get it like every month with my hand surgeries and all kinds of surgeries from boxing.
I'm not saying asking.
I'm like a veteran of anesthesia.
You're not.
Yeah, unfortunately. I never quite wake up the same when I wake up from anesthesia.
It's like a bad knockout. It's never the same.
Well, yeah, it really is, bro. It's so weird.
The doctor's like, I go to recovery and he's like, oh, he's in recovery, he's fine. Give him like 20 minutes and he'll come to and you know, just take it slow with him. I'm like, yeah, doc, we got time, you know. I didn't know that meant 2.5 hours.
Yeah. You go in there, you put your balls on his head.
Yeah, forget about it.
Pictures.
Yeah. And he's out fucking cold.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's bad news.
Like me, I get anesthesia. Like, I get up, I'll go like play a sport afterward.
What sports is he?
Because he anesthetizes himself every night with alcohol.
Exactly.
Yeah, what's the anesthesia gonna do to him?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, the doctor really said that. Because he's a supreme athlete, they don't drink. They don't use medication. They don't do anything.
So it makes them groggy.
Oh, it fucks them up big time.
That makes sense.
It's like a foreign
substance. You don't go out for colonics. They just put a tube and they shoot water.
They put a tube. And you can watch all the Nutella come out.
And you really lose weight. The first time was really bad.
Yeah, how do you lose 5 extra pounds or something? You're not big 5 pounds.
Mink,
yeah,
for you.
Mink.
If you've never done it before,
from 152 to 147, imagine.
There you go.
Or like, you know, like say 153 to 158. And then you have to just sweat a pound?
Yeah, you'd bro, be that's psyched. Thing, right? Right? What if it's like something new and like I don't feel good after? Like, is it possible you don't feel good after? I'll never like to try anything new before, like, well, you know,
you'd be fine.
A fight or something, you know?
It was amazing, though. She could tell that I smoked pot by seeing what came out.
Get out of here.
Yeah, she's like, you smoke pot recently?
Can they tell anything else?
She knew I had gay sex, which was also weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah. That's uncomfortable if you're not out of the closet, you
right.
know?
Right. And I was like, no.
Like, your mom's there.
Right.
And she's like,
why is my mom at my colonic?
Oh, well,
I'm 57 years old. What's
wrong with you? That's true.
You know, can we go move on to the boxing?
We won't move on to the boxing. We're not doing a rant episode this week. We're just going to kind of flow. And this does have to do with boxing. We're talking about making weight, and we're talking about
shooting
Keith Thurman said he did it, and we might do it, I might do it. And we couldn't figure out what it was called, and now we figured out what it was called. And I'm saying, like, you know, it gets more difficult to make weight these days.
Someone like him could lose 5 in that setting.
Saying that's what I heard. I don't know what I could lose.
What would I lose? Like 25?
You have to do.
You can't lose 25 pounds doing a colonic. No. That's impossible.
You'd probably have to
do like three sessions.
Times. Yeah.
Right.
They sign you up
5 pounds a piece.
Well,
hey. Maybe we should go together.
All right.
No.
Yeah.
Do you want to hold hands while we do it?
Yeah, sure. That's cute.
I mean, whatever goes in my ass doesn't go in your ass, though.
No. You know, like, whatever. You eat doesn't make me shit.
Yeah. We got our own tubes.
Sterilized. Yes.
Sterilized. I don't want to.
They shoot water up. They ask you when you want to release, and the first time's uncomfortable. Like, all right, release. And then I went back a week later.
What do you mean? Like, it feels like you got diarrhea or something?
No, just it's uncomfortable. It's water shooting up inside you. And you're like, you release, and they release it, and the stuff comes out.
Wait. I don't get it. Because this is getting weird on me.
They're rinsing you out.
I understand they're rinsing you out, but when you got to go, you got to go. Like, what is it like? It forces, like, a bowel movement or something?
It's just uncomfortable. There's water being shot up in your colon. And
then you just lose weight because you take everything else.
It all comes out.
It's like a power wash.
I'm serious, dude. I've heard a lot of MMA fighters do this for making weight.
The first time, I
might have to consider it.
I went back.
But
a week
as
later,
we discuss it more, I'm considering it less and less.
I'm trying to help you. I went back a week later. I could take the water. It didn't bother me at all.
Really?
All the old stuff.
All the gunk was out.
It was gone.
30 years, huh?
Yeah.
30 years
of gunk. Hot dogs and
30 years.
Yeah, tater tot.
30 years.
30 plus. What do you want? I'm saying when I got it done. The first time I did it was like 8 years ago. Leave me alone.
30 years. Wow, Minka.
But no, the colonoscopy, my boss went yesterday. So that procedure, they give you this nasty drink you have to drink, right?
You
can't eat anything.
For how long?
Well, this is the funny part of the story, right? Uh-oh. So he drinks this on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
He couldn't eat Sunday, and he couldn't eat Monday morning.
Why? Why?
He's burnout.
Why did he drink
my
Saturday?
My father-in-law's like, why didn't you set it up for Monday and drink the stuff on Sunday?
Right.
He's like, oh, yeah, that would have been better.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he starved himself for no reason.
So he couldn't drink or eat anything all day?
You could broth. Like a broth.
Wow, like crackers and broth. Yeah,
I did
yeah,
it. Have he's an imbecile. You do it the day before.
Right.
Yeah. That is kind of
you stop eating like at one certain time, then you drink that that's stuff, it. And that's it.
The stuff tastes like shit, right?
Yeah, it's nasty.
That's kind of crazy, right?
Because what you're doing then is that stuff makes you go. So you're cleaning yourself out in a sense so that the doctor doesn't get Nutella on the camera as much and he could see more or less what's going on up there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Brooklyn to the World, the colonic episode.
The colonic episode is right.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Yo, speaking of like, to the world and Brooklyn and all this stuff, remember when we used to leave the nightclubs and used to always argue with the Arab guy who used to give the halal food because he used to always overcharge you?
I'm finally going to get him back.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Trump's going to be in office and the motherfucker's going to be out of here.
You think so?
What is wrong?
The halal fight's got the halal guy's allowed to stay, bro. I mean,
tell you something.
Let me tell you something. Guy just charged me for 2 pretzels and 2 Snapples, $15. And I was in such a rush and I'm so hungry and I'm making weight and I wanted to eat half a pretzel, okay? So I was like, just thinking, like, pay him. I mean, it was two and two, but still.
Go for it. Yeah.
At the end of the day, $15. Then I walked away and I'm like, this fucking guy, $15, two pretzels and two Snapples? There's just no way.
But you want them to stay.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they're still up to no good. What they were trying to hustle people. Like I was just in such a haze because I was late here and I was trying to get to the studio because I was late and I'm hungry, making weight, and I'm kind of delusional when I'm gotta skip meals for these little fucking small snacks and shit. And I honestly shouldn't have been having the pretzel. So in my mind, I had that guilt trip. Like I shouldn't be having a pretzel right now, but I'm gonna have one anyway.
Right.
So like everything else, I'm thinking about it. Like, when he said $15, I'm like, you know, it's kind of expensive, but. I didn't exactly give it a lot of thought until I was in the elevator coming up here. And then I'm like, wait a minute, this scumbag charged me $15. I'm trying to come up with the prices. What did he charge me? $5 a piece for the pretzels and $2.50 a piece for the Snapples? There's no way. There's no way. So I thought of all the times you used to argue when we used to leave Crowbar. There was the guy outside with some nice halal food. This wasn't pretzels. This was like nice halal food. This guy was good. And this guy used to, I mean, Pete would come out hammered every week. I would come out hammered sometimes, and sometimes I'd be sober. So I'd actually watch this guy screw not only us over, but screw like everybody. Other people over too. Like charging $10 for a Sunkissed. Like it was crazy.
I used to give him the casino, remember?
So Peter used to give him all kinds of lines. He used to argue back and forth.
You having a good night, kicking everybody's dick in. Motherfucker. Take this kebab and pound it. Bro, think of, all right, so four shish kebabs and two sodas. What should you pay? And this is 10 years ago.
Yeah, this is more. This is like 04, 05.
30 bucks.
Neither I nor Peter 30? Had money.
Really? Four shish kebabs? Wait, $7? Oh, little tiny things?
Dude, on the stick.
Oh, just a little
bro,
on the
this
stick.
Is also 2000. This is when you were 34. Oh, 2004, right? You know, 2005, you know, like around then.
Boston beat the Yankees. It was a horrible year. So it's like $4 a piece? I don't know. Right? $16, $18?
Right. Try 40. I'm like,
what the fuck did you say?
Was it organic?
And there's a line. There's a long line. Oh, peace starts arguing with the guy.
I'm like, did you say 40 is in 4-0? Like, I got to give you 220s for this? Yeah,
my friend. He's like, he always makes like he didn't speak English.
You know, like, the fuck out of here, bro. $40.
And then
when
Peter
you get
to,
out of the club.
Peter used to pay him, you're getting this, and that's all you're getting. And he still used to take it because it was still a good deal.
Yeah.
Like, he's telling him, like, nah, you're getting 20 or 25, whatever. He gets 25 bucks. That's all you're getting from me, buddy. The guy's not going to leave 20 people behind him in line to argue with Peter over 10 bucks that he's screwing him over anyway. Because
you already took the food, too, didn't you?
Yeah. So Peter would beat him instead.
But well, you're waiting for the second one. You eat the first one because you don't want to walk with two.
Yeah.
You know?
But it was funny, the communication skills of them. This was every week, bro. This was every week. We'd leave Crowbar.
Same guy.
Yeah, same guy. Yeah, he'd station himself right outside of Crowbar.
He saw us coming every time.
Everybody would come out hammered at a Crowbar. So it was like the same guy every week, and Peter would argue with him every week.
I'm a man of principle.
Yeah, you're making America fat again.
The guy would know him at this point. The guy would know him. Like, buddy, don't fuck me over tonight, buddy. Don't you do it.
How much you charging tonight, you cocksucker?
Anyway, those are good old days.
The good old days. So, we had some fights over the weekend, right?
We did.
Some good fights.
A couple of different cards. I was calling the Thurman Porter card. We had, let's talk earlier in the day, though. We had Anthony Joshua and Dominic Brazil. What do you think
of that?
And off of TV, we didn't get the fight here in America. We had George Groves beat Martin Murray, which is a nice win for George Groves.
It is. I couldn't pick the winner in that fight.
Honestly, Jared, our boy Jared, hit me up. He said he was taking Groves. He thought Groves was a lock. He wasn't sure if he was a knockout or not. And I said, honestly, Martin Murray's really tough. Wait, I wouldn't say he's getting stopped.
That wasn't on TV?
So he hit. So Jared, our boy Jared, shout out to Jared Prestaroni.
He's coming into town.
And he's coming for the wedding. He hits the Groves. Mr. Locksmith hits Groves and the over. Boom. Just
this
like that.
A great fight,
Groves
right?
by decision.
Those guys are two tough guys, and you could see them just going at it. You know, that. Like typical,
but Groves has fast hands, you know. Like,
Groves was beating the life out of Carl Froch until Carl Froch just fucking came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But then I saw you were probably busy. I saw
go for it, spit it out. Go ahead,
Chris Eubank Jr.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
He's a beast. He's really, really good.
That guy had no business being in the ring with him either.
No.
Isn't he the mandatory for Danny Jacobs? Isn't that fight supposed to happen? I mean, what's going on with that?
Well, they said
now
Triple G.
He wants to fight Triple G
He wants to fight Triple G. And
skip right over.
As far as I heard, it's being made.
Yeah.
Like,
and he's tough. Eubank will go out fighting against Triple G. Like, he's got his father's craziness, you know?
Yeah. Like, he said he has his father's chin, too, which is one of the best chins you can have.
He's going to need it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm telling you, he'll crack Golovkin too. He'll
absolutely
hit Golovkin, you know?
And he's going to give him a look that Golovkin's not used to, you know.
No, be interesting. I like somebody actually stepping up to the plate,
right,
like that. You
exactly.
know, he's
what I respect.
A sick bastard. And he's been talking about Golovkin for like a year, bro. He's a sick bastard.
He's the only one who'll fight him. He's the only one.
Sick
and I was like, I'll fight him in 2020.
Sick in a good way.
I'll fight him in 2020 at 152.5.
When he's 45, I'll fight him.
Why you guys like lower your voices when you do? Why do you do that? Why
it
you get
fluffy?
Why you get the squeal voice?
I don't know. Just you know, on the mood.
All right. So,
we're doing Oscar saying if Canelo was going to fight him or not.
Okay. So,
he's going to fight him. See.
So what about the what do you think of Joshua in Brazil?
Joshua is an animal.
Joshua really is an animal.
You know,
but speaking of locksmiths, what else was hit over for that fight? What was hit?
The over.
Yeah, the nice. Over.
That was a
Peter
lock.
Collins had the lock of the night, the over. What was it, 3.5 rounds?
3.5. That's
where
what
do
I'm
you
saying.
Get your balls big enough to
I said it
go
here
against an undefeated guy, 3.5 rounds?
Brooklyn to the world, I said
granted,
Brazil has character. He's a tough son of a bitch.
I wanted to take the under. I did.
It's tough.
Because I went to watch Brazil's last fight, and I was like, this guy gets hit like a ton, and he's slow.
He did get hit. And he is kind of slow. He is. That was his problem.
But he took it.
That was his biggest issue with Joshua. Is just Joshua's just a levels above.
He's like an old school heavyweight. That's like one of those like old school slow heavyweights.
He's just a big guy.
Lumbering,
yep.
And Joshua's like, if you're not on point, he's going to counter the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And Brazil
yeah,
had
over
no
over the top
feints.
Right hand. Yeah.
The jab was the same speed every time.
It was
kind of
just
going to eat that
up. It was kind of just elementary at a certain point. It was like, at what point is Joshua going to stop him? Or can this guy really be tough enough to survive?
And then Brazil will land the shot and Joshua will laugh.
Because it was not an honor at that point. He had broken him down.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Joshua I like because he's fundamentally so sound and he brings the power behind it. You know, he's not totally loose and elusive like that. So it'll be interesting if he fights David Haye.
He's just getting better and better, you know what I mean?
It's very likable guy, too.
Yes. Likable guy, really cool.
Little
honestly,
kid
I like
snuck
both.
In the ring. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah,
the little kid snuck in the ring, and Joshua like put his arm around him, like around his head, like take a picture with him. And I think he must have said to him, like, you don't belong in here, do you? You know, and the kid was just like, put his hands in the air, like, I don't know. And they got the kid out of there. Yeah. He just ran in.
Like Wilder's talking about he wants to fight Joshua.
Yep.
I don't think that fight happens overnight, you know what I mean?
We don't want it to, right? We want those guys to build up a little more.
What about this? What's going on with, speaking of Wilder, with this Povetkin thing? I mean, you got the Bryabinski threatening to sue everybody now. He's like,
sue for what? Like, I feel like Rocky. Sue me for what?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on over there, but I suppose the fight is still going to happen at the end of the year, which is a little weird to me.
Come on, Pug. Touch me.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. So that's kind of weird, too. I mean, there's a little circle in the heavyweight division now.
And we lost the Tyson Fury fight.
We lost
the
Tyson Fury fight with Klitschko over his ankle or something like that. Then he was at the European Cup, football, soccer. And he was buying Jaeger bombs for everybody. You see his tweet? He bought 200 shots of Jaeger bombs for everybody at the European Cup. Yeah.
Cool.
And then now there's a rumor that he failed finandrolin.
Yeah.
Failed a drug test.
Somebody asked me about that.
Which is so weird because why would you talk like that the way he's talking about being so against PEDs and then you're taking them? Like, dude, really?
He's kind of trashy.
I don't know. The hypocrisy makes me lose a lot.
I don't want to talk bad, but he just comes across a little trashy. You know. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't mind his whole gimmick until that. I mean, if he really did fail the steroid test, his whole gimmick I was totally cool with. I mean, I totally like somebody who's got a gimmick and he fights
and the Jews.
I mean, not hating aside. I mean, I like somebody with a gimmick. I can respect that, but. Now the hypocrisy. If you're talking about PEDs and then you're the one taking them too. I mean, I hope that's not true. I hope he didn't fail the test and I hope it's just a rumor. But and hopefully we get to see Klitschko and Fury later on in the year.
Well, I would like to see it either proved or disproved.
Yeah, exactly.
Know?
And I think
I don't like the rumors.
Yeah, of course.
Because I don't want to speak on rumors and then I'm when the person's wrong. Because I can't stand the guy, but I don't like negative. Things
BS.
That are non-factual.
Yeah, you
got to
respect his name when you speak on it, you know, right?
I don't have to, but I wouldn't go and call. It's like calling a guy a rat when you don't have like, any proof, you know what I mean? You can't just say, oh, this guy's a fucking rat. You know what I mean? Like, in this case, you can't say that he cheated when you don't actually know. Right. Somebody that's just a hater on him can say, oh, he took this.
That's true. Well, if he did, it'll come out, and if he didn't, then it won't come out. I mean,
wasn't like a
month
ago he had a big belly, right, and he showed off his belly.
He always has a big belly, and even in the ring. This is what surprises me.
He's going to the European Cup, but I'm psyched. Like,
even in the ring, he doesn't look good.
No, but he looked better. He looked in shape against Klitschko. He
did
won 12 rounds. He, more more so than that big belly.
But I'm saying, look at the guys. You look at his peers. Vladimir Klitschko, Anthony Joshua.
You know how to get a guy body Deontay that big Wilder. To be that ripped, though? I mean, he's 6'10". Also, the mass he has is
mass. It's fat.
No,
it's totally fat. It's just robustness. It also makes him a problem because when a guy is 6'10" and being that robust, it makes him a problem.
He's a big guy.
He's a big
guy. My strippers are robust.
This is not robust.
You have strippers?
Oh, I used to. Get married Friday. Don't.
No, I mean, like you said, my strippers, like you own
like
them.
Like the strippers. Yeah, well, listen.
What, something you want to come out? You want to speak
no,
on?
No, no, no. I'm just saying.
Pete's confessional.
Strippers are robust. They're busting out of their clothes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, busty.
A heavyweight champion of the world shouldn't be busting out of anything unless it's busting through a wall. Yeah. You know what I mean? Sure. Like you look at Anthony Joshua, you look at David Haye, you look at
Wilder.
They're all
big,
these
strong
guys.
Dudes. It's a
even
new,
a kid,
it's a new era.
The kid Martin that won the title and then lost it to Joshua. The kid, he wasn't even nearly as big as these guys, but he's in good shape.
Well, I guess with the back, Frank Bruno was real big.
Right.
And,
but this guy's bigger than them all, though. Yeah.
Yes.
You gotta understand. I think
bigger and
bigger
fatter.
Than...
It's like Chris Areola. There's
no
excuse.
He's not like Chris Areola.
He's not Chris Areola. But their body is horrible.
I understand, but you're not gonna see an Adonis every time. You're not gonna see like a Anthony Joshua every time either.
Is his brother?
Not everybody's body is like
Peter Fury. His brother?
Yeah.
Or his cousin?
Cousin. I think his cousin. Yeah.
His cousin. Does he look like that?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No.
So it's the guy. So stop with the fucking
maybe he likes
hype.
A couple pints of Guinness in between.
He likes more than a couple.
Yeah.
And that's fine, too. But
he's
you're going to look
likes,
like that.
He obviously likes Jager bombs, too, because he was
Who
going
doesn't
crazy.
Doesn't like Jager bombs?
Yeah, yeah, he was going crazy at the
tasty.
European Cup.
I had some Jager bombs in London.
Shocking.
At the hotel in London.
Boom.
London. So Jager bomb. You want a Jager bomb?
So that was the card over in England, sold out as usual. Anthony Joshua packs the house.
That's cool, man.
Stops Dominic Brazil. I mean, if you haven't been to an Anthony Joshua fight live, it's definitely a treat. And I've gotten to see two live in 10, person.
10,000 people for the wing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a treat in general. It reminds you of, it's the closest thing I've seen to Ricky Hatton so far, you know. And it's not quite Ricky Hatton yet, but who knows, maybe it could develop into that,
it's
you know.
Pretty close, it's getting there.
It's he's just starting his rise to meet his meteoric rise right now.
And
so.
He's not about trash talking, dude.
Like,
he doesn't
He's
want
very
that.
Classy. I like that.
He really
And he's
is.
Getting better. But I will tell you, man, David Haye is still a threat, man. David Haye
is
still
of course
a threat.
He is.
You know? And both guys that I like a lot, Haye and Joshua.
It's the time that you can see Joshua get encountered.
Yeah, it's a huge fight when they do finally make it. And then I look forward to hopefully being there.
If you think Joshua's fast, watch David Haye's hands.
Yeah. Haye's like a lightweight in a heavyweight's body.
Right.
He's got a lot of athleticism, so he brings a different wrinkle to the table.
Did he fight a cruiserweight first, right?
He fought at cruiser, yeah.
He knocked out Enzo Macronelli.
And he knocked out John Mark Womack, too, who at the time was the premier cruiserweight in the world at the time he stopped him. So I remember Haye in the amateurs. I remember being at a USA versus England duel. We fought in London in a hotel. And Haye knocked out the guy that was representing us at heavyweight, the U.S. team. And I always remembered him after that because he it was such a smooth knockout, you know. And I said, man, this guy's sharp. This guy's good, you know.
And they also at that time had Audley Harrison, right?
Audley had just turned pro. He was a guest commentator.
But he was the super heavyweight, right?
Yeah, Haye was heavyweight, but Audley had just turned pro. He had just won the gold medal at the Olympics, and he was a co-commentator for
gold
the Sky
medal
team.
Gold medal at the Olympics, but never panned Olympics. Out.
Yeah, never panned out. And Haye was still in the amateurs. He was on the England team that we fought against. And he stayed in the amateurs for another year. He went to the World Championships the next year. The World Championships that I skipped, actually, that I turned pro for in Ireland the next June. And
the
Goodwill Games and the World Championships. They were the next summer that I ended up skipping over because I turned pro. But that was actually a tournament I was supposed to be at as well, but I decided to turn pro. You know, you chase the money at that point.
Absolutely.
But Haye ended up turning pro about a year later. So I remembered him that day, and I never forgot him because he stuck out. That knockout stuck out to me a lot. You know who else is on that show that I hadn't remembered? That was talking to me when I was in Marbella. The fighter from England, the lightweight. What's his name? Oh, man, I'm forgetting now, man. The lightweight. He lost the world title fight to Frank Warren's guy. He's with Frank Warren, too. WBO. WBO. Not the WBO. Was it?
I always thought it was Ricky Burns.
WBO, no, WBO super lightweight. Ricky Burns is. Which title? Oh, man. Which one of the... Flanagan is the lightweight champion that Frank Warren has. He defended against another Brit. Oh, my God. Why am I remembering his name? Cool kid, too, man. Oh, man.
You box
right, this is going to get me
Flanagan
mad right now.
Fact checker?
Terry Flanagan. Terry
box
Flanagan.
Right,
Yeah. Derry Matthews. Oh, boom. Okay. Boom. Never mind. I got it. Never boom.
We're,
little,
we got
a little slow
fact
on the fact check today, Seth. A little slow on the fact check.
It's this damn Studio B.
So, yeah, Derry Matthews. He was also on the British team, the English team that we fought against. I don't remember Derry, but Derry was telling me he actually had the video to that whole show. And I was like, yo, give me the video, man. He's like, he goes, it's funny, Paulie. He goes, you the way you were talking in the interviews for the back at that time, because at that time, I guess I was like really arrogant and really cocky. But I don't remember because I never got the video for that fight, you know,
right.
And for that whole show. And he was talking about how I'm going to be a star. I was talking about how I'm going to be a star one day. And it's just knowing all that stuff. You know what it is? At that time, I also loved Prince Nassim Hamed. So I knew I was in England.
You weren't wrong.
I knew I was in England. And I knew Nassim Hamed was a big deal at that time. So I was basically doing my best trying to imitate the flashiness and the brashness of Nassim Hamed and when I was in front of their cameras, you know. But it was funny. Yeah, I guess I panned out as well, you know. So it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool experience. But yeah, so Hay always stuck out to me ever since then, and so you know I've watched his rise to stardom as well. And him and Joshua, I think, will be interesting, man. I think especially at heavyweight, you know, heavyweights mature later, so I think Hay is still not in the maturing process, but I still think he's a prime heavyweight. Still looks in great shape.
He's still fit.
He was down at South Beach when I was down there training, and still looks fit, still looks ready.
He's still fit to fight, isn't he?
You have pictures on Twitter.
He brought out his buddy Joe Fournier, who also fights under the Haymaker banner. Joe Fournier is interesting because he's a fighter because he wants to be, but he's got a lot of money. He's friends with a lot of celebrities.
Cool.
He owns a nightclub, several nightclubs actually, but one of the nightclubs he owns is in Greek island of Mykonos. He always tells me, like, yo, you got to come. It's unbelievable the parties we have and stuff. It's crazy. It's good. So I'm thinking to myself, man, I was like, this guy just wants to fight because he wants to fight, you know, because he doesn't have to fight. He's actually like a socialite of some kind, you know, like he's got money,
right.
And so he was down there.
His motivation is not money.
Yeah, his motivation is just to fight, you know, which is cool, you know, real cool. And actually,
you had a friend like that, right?
Who?
Liam.
Oh, Liam. Yeah. Well, Liam wasn't a club owner. His family had money.
Yeah.
Liam. I forgot what was his last name. Oh man, Liam Vaughn. My boy Liam Vaughn. Yeah. He was in L.A.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back to Fournier. Yeah, it's funny because he's in Milan right now. And when I was celebrating Italy beating Spain the other day at the Euro Cup, I get a tweet from him that he's videoing on the piazza in Milan and everybody's going crazy. And he was out there too, you know, so Joe gets around. Shout out to Joe Fournier. Shout out to Haymaker David Hay. Shout out to Anthony Joshua, and congrats to him on the performance over the weekend. And we look forward to eventually that Joshua and Hay fight. And hopefully I get to call it either for Showtime
that
or Sky,
awesome.
For both, if that's the case. Now, moving on to other fights, right? What was the other fight? The other card?
Showtime on CBS.
Yes.
What do you
have?
What do you have? What do you have?
All right, let's stop. Wait.
You've worked for CBS.
Go for
on
it.
CBS.
Yeah.
Why were they saying it's the first time in 35 years?
Because it was prime time.
What does that mean?
I've worked on afternoon shows on CBS.
Oh.
After 8 o'clock.
First time CBS prime time in
39 years.
Yeah.
I was like, what are they talking about?
Like the guy in Coming to America says, right?
Where's the spoon?
Where's the spoon?
That's beautiful.
What's wrong with the soup?
It?
What's wrong with the soup? The soup too hot? No, the soup's fine. The soup too cold? No, the soup's fine. What's wrong with the soup? Where's the spoon?
Anyway,
Try
to America, another classic New York movie.
That guy Eddie Murphy played him too.
Eddie Murphy played everybody. Eddie Murphy played everybody. Right?
Great movie.
What does those residuals checks look like? You play 17 people in one movie.
I think you just get one check.
Yeah,
you didn't sign up for 17 contracts. Yeah. You're silly.
Yeah, so on CBS, we had PBC on CBS with the Showtime crew called it. My guys, Al Bernstein, Mauro Ranallo, Jim Gray, myself, rest of the crew. And quite a good card. I thought it was a good timing for a great card on primetime television.
It needed to happen.
It needed to happen.
Two fights were great, man.
Two really good fights. I thought Jared Hurd really... I wouldn't say a star is born, because if you knew boxing, you knew about Jared Hurd already. But I think Jared really made a statement, because you know Javier Molina is no slouch of a fighter, former Olympian, and a solid professional who can go on himself to you know be a competitive guy in the weight class.
Jared
Hurd is so smooth, and so hard to figure out what he's going to do next. So you know he varies himself so well. It's just how much scarier can the junior middleweight division become? I mean, there are legitimately a solid 8 out of the top 10, that could be number 1 in a lot of weight classes. I mean, it is so strong. It is such a good weight class.
But then people criticized me when I said that Canelo's not even the top 5.
you have Canelo coming back to GM Middle, right? You have the Charlo twins. You have Boo Boo Andrade. You have Arislandi Lara. You have even somebody like Austin Trout.
J-Rock.
J-Rock Williams. Yes, J-Rock Williams. Even somebody like Austin Trout's still solid. Vadas Monerosian is very solid. You have now Jared Hurd.
What about the kid, Erickson?
Erickson Lubin is coming up the ladder, really
he's
showing.
Savage.
The Molina twins, Molina brothers are still solid. You know,
they're
upper echelon top 10.
Right.
Maybe in another weight class they'd be top 10. Maybe in the junior middleweight division they're just outside the top 10.
Right.
But you got Willie Nelson who maybe
you
got to
beat those guys.
Yeah, Willie Nelson who just lost to Demetrius Andre, but Willie Nelson against anybody else is a rough guy to deal with. You know, it is rough, man. What a weight class! It's crazy. It's fun for us to watch it, but I mean, it's scary to like think you got to fight in there among those guys.
Absolutely.
You know,
I never saw Jared Hurd fight.
Well, you've been in that weight class with the welterweights. Now it's nice to see it somewhere else. You know,
welterweights still remain pretty solid, but junior middle is just the depth of that weight class.
Welterweights are always there. When the heavyweights,
and then Liam Smith, the WBO champion, was fighting Canelo now. You know, go ahead.
But like the heavyweights take a break and people like stop watching boxing. Meanwhile, the welterweights are always there to keep it afloat, right? And now you have super welterweights. Now you have featherweight. Like, boxing is on a fucking huge high.
Here's the thing with these junior middleweights, too. Kell Brook has a lot of trouble making welterweight, and you keep hearing rumors that he may go up to junior middleweight, and maybe the Spence fight will eventually happen at welterweight.
Somebody we forgot to mention, Miguel Cotto's at 154.
Miguel Cotto's at 154, yeah. But I'm saying even Kell Brook may wind up there very soon.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So with Kell Brook, I mean, we're either going to get him against Spence or we're going to get him at junior middleweight. So there's no easy outs there either. You know what I'm saying? It's tough when you can barely make the welterweight limit and you're trying to make your way to the junior middleweight limit where these guys, all these dogs are waiting for you, man.
Absolutely.
So it's a good weight class. Jared Hurd, a solid performance. And then we move on to the main event. What do you think of that, Pete?
I didn't have it as close as everybody else. I don't give credit, and you know, nothing against Porter. He's a tough kid. He tries real hard, but and he's in good shape, obviously. Mm. But I don't give credit for football tackles and football tactics. And I mean American football, not slide tackles. But the kid literally elbows, hits behind the head, hits
shoulders
in your back. He smothers himself. He pushes with his forearm. He headbutts. Everything is ugly about the way he fights. And I heard you say to someone like, well, if you make him not smother himself, maybe he's not as effective. That's very true, but that's a fucking shame, dude. Like, this is where what's gotten him here.
Yeah, he's got to be aggressive. I don't feel like Sean Porter is the kind of fighter that can sit back and try to create space and try to. I feel like his main asset is his aggression. So the same things that make him a little bit susceptible also make him a great fighter. You know, make him a tough guy to deal with. Which
somebody
is, you know,
hit me on Twitter
pushing,
was like
the pushing and the rough stuff, the rushing in sometimes too much, rushing in too much to the point that he smothers himself. The reason I thought Thurman was more effective was because he was able to get more leverage on his shots because there was more space when he was landing those shots. So there was enough space to where you bring momentum behind your shots. Because when you're smothering, there's not enough momentum behind your shots for them to really stand out. Thurman consistently had enough space between his shots to develop the momentum and land some eye-catching shots.
Listen,
you know,
at the end of the day,
it's Thurman. It's hard.
Yeah, at the end of the day, if you can get Sean Porter to think and stop that hellacious pace,
and he did.
There's a reason for that.
He's hitting shots.
He got hit hard and clean, and it was timed. That's the stuff that people aren't realizing. Like, somebody hit me up on Twitter. It was like, oh, well, he made Keith panic. I said, panic? Oh, he stumbled a few times. Bro, the guy's literally spearing you.
Yeah.
This is not, he's not walking towards you. He's sprinting at you.
And you trip over his feet.
So he's going forward as fast as he can. You have to go backwards. Do the math. He's going to get you. So for you to be slithery in there, yeah, of course there's going to be a little hiccups along the road of a 12-round fight.
Never lost his composure.
Yeah. On the inside, he's more effective.
Yeah.
He's landing little touches here, catching shoots, and in between Sean's barrage of bullshit. You know, Keith would impress me. Like, I can't even speak on how much he impressed me, because he did more than I even thought he could.
Like I was talking to Pete earlier before you got here. He's like, Sean Porter's a fighter you cannot look good against, and Thurman looked good against him. Like,
well, as good as you're going to look against.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Sean Porter's to the point where he's so good that now just beating him makes you look good. Yeah. Now, there's guys that are at the level where, you know, there's some guys you're not at that level where you got to beat them and look good. Some guys, it's just a thing that's accepted. That if, as long as you beat them, you know, they're it's a good performance, because just beating them is a good enough performance. I mean, Porter has two losses and he's given both guys runs for their money, Kell Brook and Keith Thurman. You know, I also gave Keith more props, and I thought he won the fight because he was able to be a bit more effective. And I thought when he was able to slow Sean just a little bit, just enough to where he was able to use his legs, and the thing that showed me the most character was he started to really become most effective with his boxing ability after he got hurt to the body. He got hurt to the body, and you started to sense a momentum shift for Porter again, and you started to sense, oh man, it's going to get bad for Keith as the late rounds start coming upon us. He just got hurt with a bad body shot. And instead, that's when Keith was able to summon the will to maintain his composure and box and box and box. And Sean kept coming the whole way. I mean, anytime Keith stopped, Sean was right in his face and throwing punches and smothering and doing the pushing and roughing Keith up as best he could. And at times, it was very effective as well. But it just wasn't, I thought the consistency of Keith was more consistent than the consistency of Porter. Porter's coming forward a lot of times, but it wasn't always effective. It made for a fun fight, though, and it made for a fight that people probably want to see again. I wouldn't mind seeing it again, even if you don't see it right away. And it made for a damaging fight for both guys, but entertaining fight for all the fans.
But people have to understand when.
Why were they booing?
The criteria that judging is based on is ring generalship, Thurman all the way. Defense, right? Keith Thurman all the way.
Clean, effective punch.
Clean, effective aggressiveness. That's, to me, that's not Porter. Just because you're a barrage and you come forward with your head and everything, that's not effective aggression. What Keith was doing was effective. You know, he stopped him in his tracks a few times, gave him time to do what he wanted, back on the jab, set himself up for the next, you know, scenario or whatever. This was all thought out by Keith. Like, to me, it's like Sean doesn't think.
Well, they know each other very well, too.
Yeah. But, like, Sean fights that way no matter who he's fighting, you know? But I just felt like it was actually pretty easy for me to score. Like, I couldn't give Porter 5 rounds. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
And the boos, like you said, I don't know what the fuck they were booing about.
Right.
You gotta understand also Sean trained in Brooklyn for a lot of the training camps, so, you know, maybe the fans were.
You know, he's a likable guy, the church thing, the dad thing. You know what I wanted to talk about?
What?
There was a point in the fight where Keith got headbutted bad. Mm-hmm. That cut was bad. And in the corner, I think this is, I don't want to, you know, overstep my boundaries, but I think this is like a meditation thing for him. He had his head down in the corner for almost a whole minute, and I'm like, "Don't tell me this kid is gonna fucking quit." You know, I'm in my seat. I can't speak on how it feels to be in that kind of pace, but I'm like, "Don't fucking tell me after all this kid's gonna quit." Not only did he not quit, he came right out and was jumping at the 10-second count. I'm like, "Oh my god!" Like, he just had his head down, as if shit was really bad. And then when
he
was composing himself. I was like, holy shit, that's awesome.
He's a very interesting guy.
He is. Yeah. Deep, and they say that he meditates. Yeah. So you never know if in that minute he just says to himself, block everything out and just relax. Take your breaths, relax. Because they're working on his eye and he just had his head down. I'm like, wow, this doesn't look good. And then Paul, he just came out.
Paul, you've been in enough fights. I mean, I'm not a fighter, obviously, but I imagine there's a time when you have to, like, dig deep down. It's a gut check. It's about what you have inside, like your heart.
Yeah. You got to ask yourself questions and answer them the right way before you go back out into the ring for more violence, you know? And sometimes, you know, it's easier to quit, you feel like. But I want to – that's when you have to think of the quote I think I take out of Teddy Atlas's book, where people think – quitting is the easiest thing to do in a fight. Quitting, you say, oh, I'm tired right now. I can't do this anymore. So the easy way out is to quit. But Teddy Atlas mentioned something very interesting if you read his biography. He says, in reality, quitting is the tough part, because that's a decision that you're going to have to live with the next day and the day after that and the next year and the next decade.
15 minutes later in the locker room.
Even 20 minutes later in the locker room, when you're fully breathing, you have your full breath, and now you're not exhausted and you're not feeling in pain and it's over, and you're going to say, man, or the next morning when you wake up and you're going to say, man, I could have really done more. That is the worst feeling in the world. So you want to live with that the rest of your life, or do you want to bite down for another 20 minutes or for another 25 minutes, however many rounds are left? You want
sometimes
to bite down.
Sometimes it's 3 minutes.
Yeah. You want to bite down. You know, sometimes I look at the round call girl, man, and I'm for what round it is, and I'm tired and I'm uncomfortable, and I'm, you know, you lose track of the rounds when you're fighting a lot of rounds. You know, sometimes I look at the round call girl and I'll look at it, and she'll be holding up like round 8 or something, right? For example, for argument's sake, round 8. So round 8 to 12. It's 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 5 rounds. So 5 rounds, I do the math, 15 minutes. 1 minute in between, about 4 or 5 minutes. And I got to tell myself, okay, man, 20 minutes. I got 20 minutes. I can't suffer for 20 more minutes, however difficult it is. I can't get through this 20 more minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't try my hardest for 20 more minutes of my life. You know what I'm saying? That's really all it is. When you have to simplify it. You have to simplify it as best you can, because
it
becomes torturous. When you're in a tough fight and the pace is bad and you're in pain and something's hurting or something's broken or you're bleeding and or just whatever in general. You know what I'm saying?
It's getting hit harder than you've ever been hit before.
You have to simplify it. You know, you don't want to just stay in there. That's what I liked about Keith and Sean Bulk. They didn't just stay in there through the difficult fight and convince themselves, oh, I gotta stay in here. They convinced themselves not only to stay in there, but also to fight hard throughout the whole thing.
They didn't make silent contracts, which is another thing Teddy talks about.
Yes, so
it happens.
Yeah, so you know that shows a strong mental character. You know, sometimes you just stay in there and you stay in there to survive. They stayed in there and they stayed in there to win the whole way. So you gotta not only be willing to suffer, then you go out there and actually do take care of the suffering. You know what I'm saying? And it's a different level of mental stability, man, and that's why some people are fighters and some people are critics, or some people are just fans, or some people just don't want to do it.
Or some people are alcoholics.
Is that why? Yeah. You have strong mental capacity for beer?
For beer and sangria.
Yeah, nice.
That's what it is, huh?
Yeah.
I gotta say, if I was Keith Thurman, I would not want to fight Sean again.
No. Well, it's just one of those fights. You know, I think when it finally builds up to a rematch, especially if they both continue to win, it'll be like, it'll become like a $7 to $10 million rematch. You know,
it should be.
I think it will.
Does Sean now?
And now you're gonna enter. You enter into the fray. Errol Spence slowly lurking in the background.
Right.
He's got to fight Kell Brook if Kell stays at welterweight. Of course, we don't want to take away from Jesse Vargas, who's also a live guy for Kell, and he's probably the toughest name on paper for Kell, aside from Sean Porter. You know, it's getting up there. Shit is getting real. You know what I mean?
What does Sean do moving forward? Second loss. Both to world champions, both to the top upper echelon.
I mean, he hasn't disgraced himself in either loss, so I think, you know, there's still a lot of opportunity for him.
Right, but
I mean, I heard he had to strip naked to make the welterweight limit. I don't know how much longer he can make welterweight. Yeah. And honestly, I hate to think of him at junior middleweight, because we just talked about how ridiculous that weight class is. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, right now it's still promising for him, but, you know, shit could, the welterweight and junior middleweight divisions are those kind of divisions where shit can turn real bad real fast.
He
could
blow these guys without, you know, just standing up straight. That's how small he is.
That's how small
he is. You know?
But he's,
he moved up to 154. I mean, he could pipe boo-boo, like, just standing up. Like, he might need a ladder.
I don't want to jump ahead too much, but are there any...
No, Yusuf.
Are any 54s that you see that can maybe go up to 60?
Yeah, I think there's guys that have been at 54. Like, I've heard Jamal Charlo has a lot of trouble making weight, you know, so I think he'll be at 60 soon. There's guys that have been at 54 for a little while. I mean, even Canelo, obviously, I think will return to 60 eventually.
Most commonly, your first weight class is not your last weight class. You know what I mean? You turn pro, you win a title even. You're out of there soon. Right. There's very few Zab Judas of the world that could make 140 their entire life.
Hopkins.
Hopkins went up too, but he was there for a long time.
20 years, whatever, 60.
Yeah, he went 160 for a while.
Yeah, but, you know, there's guys that always end up moving up.
Canelo's fighting Liam Smith, he said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. WBO junior middleweight title.
It's like, where's the money for, like, Canelo's a draw every time.
Well, the money is, I'll tell you where the money is in for that fight. It's a world title fight. Liam Smith is a WBO junior middleweight title, so... It's all presentation. Mm-hmm. In some cases, you know, when you have a guy like Canelo, it's all about the presentation. He's already such a big name. So, what do you... Now, he just vacated his world title. So, you get him Liam Smith, who's a solid fighter. But if Canelo can beat Liam Smith, and Liam's not just going to hand him the title. But if Canelo can get the win over Liam Smith, you now have Canelo Alvarez world champion again. You know, you have now 3-time world champion, because he's been a junior middleweight champion. He's been a middleweight champion. And he comes back down to junior middleweight and wins a world title if he does beat Liam Smith. So it's all about the presentation. You've now added added more to his resume as far as world championships are concerned. You added yet another win. You can present this and put a nice little bow tie on the whole promotion and make it Canelo's return to junior middleweight as a world champion before he's going to go back up and fight Golovkin. Because He got himself into the shit by moving up to middleweight and winning a world title. And granted, he beat Cotto, who was not a middleweight himself. Regardless, with Golovkin at middleweight, once you step into the middleweight realms and you start doing good, you are gonna be expected to fight Golovkin. So, being expected to fight Golovkin, you can't turn away from it now without the criticism because you're such a big name and that Canelo is. So he's going to go to junior middleweight, but eventually now, because he's made that step to middleweight, he's going to be expected to fight Golovkin at a certain point.
Is there a bigger money fight for him than Golovkin, though? Is that the...
You know what it is? Golovkin doesn't present a lot more money than anybody else. That's the problem with Canelo. Is such a big draw. Golovkin may represent maybe a little bit more money than everybody else, but is a little bit more money than everybody else worth the chance to actually lose a fight when you can, you know, mix and match yourself against other solid guys, but guys that won't beat you possibly, you know?
Well, you guys were telling me that there's a lot of 54s you think can beat Canelo.
Yeah, I doubt Canelo fights those either. You know what I mean? I think Demetrius Andrade would beat Canelo. I think Jermall Charlo would beat Canelo. Good fights. Great fights.
J-Rock
is coming into his own. J-Rock might beat everybody, but you know we got to see him how he handles everything right now. You know what I mean? It's just so many elite junior middleweights right now. It's a scary place to be if you're a fighter in your prime and you're in that weight class. There's money to be made, but like I said, shit can turn real bad for you at welterweight and junior middleweight right now because you can be in a money position and just turn around and get your ass kicked a couple times real fast by some good fighters.
Absolutely.
And then people, regardless if you lost to good fighters or not, you lose 2-3 in a row. People don't want to hear about it anymore. You're not getting paid. You're not going to get the fights you want. You're just on the outside looking in. They don't care how good the fighters were. They don't care how deep your weight class is. Losing 2-3 fights in a row or two out of three fights at any weight class, even if your weight class is weak or if your weight class is strong, people look at you just the same way because the perception is the reality. It's not reality, but perception is reality. People are not going to understand, hey, man, this weight class is a lot deeper than the lightweight division. You know, this weight class is a lot deeper than the super lightweight division. Let's cut these guys some slack.
You don't get a pass. No,
that's the problem. And that's the problem. And that's why fighters don't fight each other anymore. People complain, oh, the old days. No, dickheads. Not the old days. Because in the old days, you could lose and people will still forgive you and you could come back in big fights and mix and match everybody and still make great fights. And people would still show up to the arenas and want to see you again. Now, you sell everybody on records, so people don't want to take chances because once you guys' record is stained, you can't unstain it anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then that's it. And then you're shot. You got like, for example, me, Paulie Malignaggi, 35, and said, oh, he's shot. He's done. Can Paulie retire already? He's shot. You know what I mean? So people don't want to reach that point. So in order not to reach that point, you can't take all the risks all the time. And that's why you don't see it as much as you used to see it in the old days.
I felt like we were going through that. What's going on in 154 now? We went through your whole career. 140 when you were at 140 was
very deep.
Baddest division in the fucking planet.
Yeah.
And then 147 was tougher.
Yeah.
When you had the WBA from Shevchenko, they had an ESPN rankings champions, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, and Paulie Malignaggi. I mean, so you want a unification bout, I mean, who you can fight?
Yeah.
You know, that's the toughest fights right there, you know, unifying those titles. And that's, you know, that's a stacked weight class. And I feel like 154 is kind of, you know, at that point now.
So I hope they get the love they deserve, you know, and get the like.
And that's the thing.
That's the thing. You can't criticize too harshly if they lose at this level. If you lose against a subpar guy, then, listen, you know, you're supposed to beat that guy.
I'm going
to
backtrack a second, speaking of losing. The Jared Herd Javier Molina fight, you know, there was a little bit of criticism on the stoppage. I personally felt Javier should have been able to finish the fight. He never was hurt. People are dying to say somebody's hurt in any little move he makes. Like, somebody makes a smother move or somebody pulls out a little bit after he takes a shot. Oh, he's hurt.
Right.
Even announcers. It is the most annoying thing in the world. Guys, other human beings are not that easy to hurt. You don't just punch somebody in the face and hurt them. You know,
other human beings, other world-class fighters.
You know what I mean? So, Herd had obviously gotten Molina's attention in the fight. He had dropped him. But even when he got dropped, it was a flash knockdown. Molina got up and it was, you know, bouncy and ready to fight the rest of the fight. And he continued to fight hard the rest of the fight and continued to make Jared Herd work the rest of the fight. Now, right before the stoppage, you see Molina pounding his chest like, all right, you got me with a shot. Come on, let's go. You know, at first he's smothered. He takes a good shot and he steps in and smothers. He looks to hold. And even one of my co-commentators made, and I wanted to correct it, but he said, oh, he hurts him there and he stepped. No, he didn't hurt him there. That's a smother tactic. That's a let's slow down the tempo because I just took a good shot. Let's slow down the tempo and cause a reset because, you know, the crowd gets excited. The crowd gets excited. My opponent gets excited. He landed a good shot. I'm not hurt, but in the excitement, a lot an exchange might happen, and then I might get hurt. So let's slow it down tactically by causing a smother, causing it a clinch or something, and slowing everything down and resetting again. You could tell Molina wasn't hurt. He was just trying to cause a reset. So he steps in and smother, trying to cause a reset. Doesn't exactly get the smother, so he pulls back out. As he pulls back out, he bangs on his chest, like punching his chest, like, come on, let's go. Like, basically saying, like, come on, let's go.
I'm still here.
And that's where the ref steps in and stops it. Now, I get it. Molina was behind. I get it. He's taking some good shots. Hurt has such a good variation to his offense. He throws shots at you that you don't see coming. You can't time. You can't anticipate because it's such a weird variation. So he was catching Molina. But Molina was live. Molina was throwing good combinations himself. He was throwing hard shots, too, like, with hurtful intentions. Bro, there's a minute left in the fight. What are you doing? Right. You know, like, it's the guy's first loss of his career. Like, chill out. You know what I'm saying? Chill out. It's, I don't know. I just felt like he didn't deserve to go out like that, go out on a stoppage like that. Like,
you said it on the air. You handled it really
well. And you know, Jim Gray told me afterwards, like, he pulled me aside after. He's like, hey, you know what? It's a different audience. You know, these people don't know. They don't want to see too much violence. You know, it's not a boxing audience. Get the fuck. No way. I said, Jim, no. I said, no. A fighter works hard to get. And then he understood. Yeah. That's the cool thing about Jim. Like, okay, Jim understands the athlete's point of view.
Go fuck himself.
No, that's the thing about Jim. If he can actually be reasonable. Sometimes he'll agree with you. Sometimes he'll disagree with you.
We can't but he can actually on the rationalize. You know what I mean?
It was a horrible stoppage.
So I said, no way. You can't stop that fight. Not right there, bro. Not after the guy. You let him take the worst of the beating already. There's a minute left.
Right.
And he's totally conscious. He's totally fine. He wants to go on. He's not stumbling. He's not gasping for air. You know, like people talk about, and for lack of a better example, you know, because this is where, you know, things happen. The Patricio Colon fight, for example, with Terrell Williams. You know, they were stumbling on each other. It was sloppy. You know, you could see the fatigue factor. You could see the hurtful
rabbit
factor
punches.
There. You know, but you could see Molina was still live. Like, there was nothing about him that told you, man, this guy might be getting hurt. You better be careful. You know, he was totally live. Like, he was in the fight. He was getting mad when he was getting hit still. But when you're in round 10, you're losing hopelessly. You're still mad. Usually by round 10, when you're losing a fight at, like, most of the rounds, you're thinking, like, man, this sucks, but I lost.
He's Mexican. They're like a different kind of breed of people. That's why Trump wants to get rid of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why Trump wants to get rid of them all. Because, they're, you know, they're just like, they're better than we are.
No, but they make for great fighters. I got to be honest. Exactly. I got to give Javier Molina credit.
Paul, whatever network you're on, always do you. Don't change who you are for whatever.
Nah,
you're on.
I'm not. You know, and that's that was the thing.
Like that
and that's what I'm trying to say. After it's a shame because Jared, it took away from the credit I wanted to give Jared Hurd after the fight was over.
Right.
After the fight was over, I wanted to be talking about a little bit about Molina's toughness.
You said
but
it.
Mostly about what a terrific performance Jared Hurd gave us. You know, like
if it went that extra minute and he got a decision,
instead,
it was a great performance.
We had to discuss the stoppage, and it took away from being able to discuss the more important things. You know, and that sucks.
But you called it too.
Yeah,
I did.
But you know,
that was cool.
It's not fair, man. You know, you give these guys the respect they deserve, man. You know, like both world class fighters, man. Let them finish it out. You know what I mean? That's what they do. They fight. Let them finish it out. You know? Yeah. This is the Hurd business. Yeah, there's risks. There's risks involved. And that's... But we know the risk. We get in there, we know the risks. You know? When the bell rings, it's up to us and not up to anybody else. The referee's there to protect, but what is he protecting Molina from? I'm still trying to figure out what he was protecting Molina from. Molina was not hurt, and the fight was almost over. So, you know, that was my two cents on that as well, you know?
You think Jared Hurd? I'm just thinking. He reminds me a little bit of Paul Williams. You think? Or no.
No, Williams. I think Jared's a little bit smarter than Williams.
And
I think
slicker.
Less of a pace. Williams just fought a really fast pace.
Yes.
Williams had that slickness to him, but he was throwing, put himself in harm's way.
9 point billion.
I felt like Williams was almost like an automatic pilot sometimes, where he would just throw and from a distance, and he'd find his range because he's so tall, and he'd throw and throw. I feel like Jared Hurd is not an automatic pilot. I feel like he's thinking very calculated in all the moves he makes and all the punches he throws, and I think there's a sinister part of him too there where he's mean in there, man. He's setting you up for the kill, you know, and I mean, I liked him. I liked everything I saw about him. He was very impressive and he got a great opportunity to impress on national television.
And, you know, it was a great two fights on CBS. Couldn't ask for anything better.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they bring us back, man. You know, and I thought it was a good call. I thought Alan Morrow did a great job.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Jim did a great job.
You guys got a great
hopefully
team.
I did a great job too. You know, hopefully we let the fans enjoy it a lot. You know, it was one of those cards where we were really happy we had that kind of card on the show, and we were happy for the fighters that they got that kind of exposure. They worked so hard to get it, and you know, hopefully a lot of positive things come out of it. You know,
I think it will. You know, I think it's a big stripe on the uniform of like PBC to put on something like that.
A stripe on the uniform?
Yeah.
Like, you mean like a black belt? Like you got a stripe on your black belt type of thing? You get like an extra stripe?
A notch on the belt. I think it rose to another level after a card like that, you know?
Sure.
But like you said before, like it's a shame that, you know, a lot of people are watching and don't actually know what they're watching. But, you know, like they say, oh, Molina was hurt and this and that. I felt like that happened 87 times in the Porter-Thurman fight, where every time Porter landed a shot, aside from that body shot, I don't think Keith was fazed by anything. I really don't.
The pace.
No, I mean shot by shot.
Yeah,
like any shot.
Yeah.
Because in the crowd, I was in the sixth row. Thanks to him, obviously. Great seats. But you hear people just going, like, every time Porter lands, oh, oh, oh. And I'm like, did you not see Keith return from that shot and hit him even harder? Like
there was times when Sean returned fire from shots that Keith landed. It was one time, and it was the 11th.
11th round he got hit with.
It was a counter right hand left hook combination. I thought Sean's head was going to be in roll 30.
Yep.
Instead, he flew back like he just got spit on. Like it was like it wasn't even a punch. Like he just flew right back, like assaulted Keith right back. I was like, oh my God, what an this is hellacious. This is just, and it was round 11. Well, usually you're sleeping from a guy punching the punching power of Thurman.
I've never seen anybody be able to maintain that kind of pace.
Yeah,
the two of them
from being the aggressor and getting hit and countered.
Yeah,
countered. That was
the aggression takes a lot more work, especially the way Sean brings it because he's a little bit tight. You know what I mean? He's cutting the ring. Even when the way Sean cuts off the ring, he cuts off the ring really in a rush pace. You know what I mean? Like, he's actual. You know what I mean?
What round was that when he Keith buckled him really good, though?
No,
too.
He buckled him. That was early. Keith buckled him
like
early.
The third or second.
Yeah, third or fourth, yeah. And Sean came back from that, too. Yeah. That's, character for him as well. He comes back
tough
from
guys,
being hurt.
Tough guys, man. Good fighters. Really, you know, like I said, if I was Keith, I wouldn't want to fight him again. He's too
and
rough,
I think
man.
I don't think they'll fight for the time being. I think they'll go separate ways.
They're going to from that fight.
Oh, that happens. Yeah. That used to happen to him.
Yeah, there was somebody showing me a picture on Instagram of Keith's back after the Porter fight. It was all scraped up, but that's the ropes. You
know, that's happened to me.
Yeah, that's just the ropes.
Sparring four rounds, that's happened to me.
Yeah, it looks like he got whipped.
Yeah,
it looks just the ropes. But I'll tell you what, speaking of PBC, we had some fights last night, too. You know, pretty good fights.
Yeah, I was too busy drinking and celebrating. So
Omar Douglas had a nice stoppage over Alexei Collado. Alexei Collado is a former amateur world champion who actually had his only loss to Rod Salka. And he gave Douglas a decent fight, a decent little tussle until finally Douglas broke him down and stopped him. But Alexei Collado was a Cuban defector who was a former amateur world champion. And, you know, people give Rod Salka a bad rap. I mean, Rod Salka's had some little key wins on his record at his own weight. You know, people talk about Rod Salka and they talk about, oh, another Rod Salka. What do you mean another Rod Salka, you fucking mental midget? What do you mean another Rod Salka? Rod Salka 130 and 35. Because people talk about him like this, we'll not get another chance. But Rod Salka at 30 or 35 is actually a pretty effective fighter. And he had a win over Alexei Collado, who was 19-1 going into last night's fight against Omar Douglas. He has a win over Amante Meza Clay, who's not a bad fighter himself. Right. You know, so. But that's all another subject for another day, the Rod Salka situation, you know. But he was a good fighter at his own weight. But Collado gave Omar Douglas a pretty good test for about 7-8 rounds, and then finally Omar stopped him. And Omar's been an impressive prospect for a little while, and he was impressive last night. But he took some shots. Collado did land some good shots on him as well. It was a good pace of a fight and a good fight, good back-and-forth exchanges until the stoppage, and a good win for Omar Douglas, a solid win for Omar Douglas, and a kind of fight that makes you better because you didn't have a guy who just kneeled over for you. And then, of course, you had the main event.
Your boy, Edna Cherry.
Edna Cherry beat Lydell Rhodes. A little bit controversial. The commentators, Brian Custer, Stephen Edwards, Breadman, and Julian Williams, they thought that Lydell had won the fight. Lydell Rhodes had won the fight, but they gave it to Edna Cherry. It was almost like, you know what, they gave one back to Cherry, you know, because Cherry probably got robbed against Jose Pedraza for the world title. Lydell fought well, but, you know, ultimately, though, it was a sloppy fight. It was a very sloppy fight, and sometimes those very sloppy fights become difficult to call, become difficult to judge. For the judges, you kind of get lost in all the sloppiness of the slop of the fight, you know? And the fight was very sloppy. Not a lot of jabbing, a lot of flailing. And sometimes when you have a fight like that, you start to lose track of who's being more effective and who's not. And you kind of start to pay attention to the bigger name. And Edna Cherry, obviously, was the bigger name. And, you know, as a matter of fact, speaking of names, Keith Thurman, who trains with Cherry in the gym in St. Petersburg, was there supporting because
They said he didn't go home.
Yeah, because Birmingham is the trainer for Thurman.
Right.
And he has a trainer at Edna Cherry as well.
Birmingham used to be with Winky.
Yep.
He's a good trainer.
It was a good week for Birmingham. I mean, good weekend for the St. Pete Boxing Club.
About judging, because it may have came off like I was criticizing them for the Thurman Porter fight. I like the fact that they got it right, and they were on the same page.
They saw a nuisance. Well, I didn't see the rounds broke down. Well,
but the score was the same, so that looks good, and it is good. You know, like, that's what we need more of.
And good and for even, people tuning in for the first time. Right, yeah, whatever.
You know, sure. There's no controversy there. Even though I can favor one guy even more than they did, doesn't mean that I don't like the call. You
they
know what I mean?
They got it right. I mean,
right, yeah. Exactly. So when you hear 115, 113 across the board, at least they both saw what they saw, and it was consistent. Even Steve Farhood, who is unofficial judge, is for the people at home, had it the same. I watched some of the rounds, and I said, I disagree with Steve there. I wouldn't have given Porter that one, but
it's
fine. But
they were all wrong, and you were wrong, because Shane Mosley had an 8-4 for Porter.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Shane Mosley also his boy. That's a problem with guys like Shane Mosley. They can't watch their boy fight and not give him rounds.
Right.
Like, you got to take that with a grain of salt, because Shane's one of those guys that, you know, he watches his boy fight, and then he's giving his boy rounds just because he's his boy. You can't judge a fight like that. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. No, Shane should know better. He's been around long enough.
Shane doesn't know anything anymore. That's the problem. Shane doesn't even know his name anymore. That's part of the issue.
Shane doesn't turn around. He's like, all right.
But Shane, what's 2 + 2? 7.
Oh, come on, man.
He's a fucking idiot, the guy.
Is he?
He's an idiot.
Why are you saying that?
He's so stupid.
Would you fight him if he was here right now?
No.
Would you hit him with one of those Corona bottles?
Hell yeah. Full I would one. Fucking glass him like Hay did to Chisora.
Glass him?
I fucking glass him. I ain't taking any shots from that dude.
Hell no.
I could think I got my carpenter knife on me somewhere. I fucking cut him up.
You came here with a knife?
No. I left it in my car. Sorry,
you.
Shane. I was just kidding.
Love you, boy.
Anyway, so is that the show today?
You know what? Let's close it out with a little Euro talk, no? A little European Cup talk.
You
got a piss too? What is it? Well, let's close the show out. Let's close the show out first.
You just tweet it.
Shout out to the Italian national team. We beat Spain. Boom. We're making all march. I gotta be honest. I was very surprised, as probably everyone who watched this tournament was. Italy has seen their best days back in the day, and recently Italy has not had the best national team and the best fortunes in these international tournaments, but seems like we're back with tactically genius performance by Antonio Conte, who doesn't have the most talented team, but together has them playing a system that really works in unison. And we're playing probably the best team left in the tournament. I mean, granted, Germany and Spain were the two teams that people were looking out for, and now we've eliminated Spain. If we could eliminate Germany, I honestly think Italy has a great opportunity to win the whole tournament, and that would be awesome, because I've never seen Italy win a European Cup in my lifetime. I've seen them win a World Cup. I've seen us lose 2 European Cup finals. So it would be cool. I don't want to jinx it. We've never lost to Germany ever in a competitive tournament, in a competitive matchup. But of course, this is
Nazis.
This is with all respect to some of the other solid teams left, this is basically the final. Italy, Germany, the quarterfinal. I think whoever wins this has a really good shot at winning.
Yeah, thanks a lot, England, for losing to Iceland.
Yeah, England lost to Iceland. Man,
the guy on the team is a part-time fucking dentist, and England can't beat them.
Cost me a nice chunk.
Really
rough.
I
gotta be honest though, Iceland, and anybody who's totally surprised from Iceland wasn't watching Iceland the last couple of years, because in the qualifying process to get to this tournament, they actually eliminated Holland. They qualified instead of Holland. Holland, the same Holland that was World Cup runner-ups in 2010 and World Cup third place in 2014. Yeah, that Holland, Iceland made it in place of them. They were in the same qualifying group. So anybody who thinks Iceland is now, that's now surprised by Iceland shouldn't be totally surprised if they eliminated that team.
They still have a roster of 15 men, though.
They still have a roster of whatever. Like, they still have only a population of 330,000 in their country. Like
England,
they're a very organized
England
team.
England invented
they're
the sport. Stout.
Yes, I get it. And England should be better. They should be better. Honestly, with the talent England has, they should always perform better, and the fans deserve better. Can you imagine if England won the World Cup? I would be so happy for their fans, because those fans are so awesome to us.
Of course. Like, I was rooting for England.
From Italy, I think I root for England even more than USA. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm telling you, bro. Like, first of all, the USA, the commentators are so arrogant. Like, it's so impossible to watch soccer or football, as we call it here in the US. Like, every time you're watching it, during the World Cup, it's all about Brazil or Germany. All about, they blow Brazil no matter what. They got to blow Brazil. Then Brazil gets beat 7-1 in the semis. They're like, whoa. Like, bro, instead of talking to the league, leading us into it, like, where Brazil we knew wasn't that strong, even if they were home in 2014, you had to let everybody get shocked with a 7-1 result. You know, when in reality, they didn't belong in the semis
anyway. False perception,
yeah.
Right?
Then in this tournament, you would have thought Spain and Germany were the only two teams in the tournament. Like they talk decently about Belgium and stuff like that, and they never have a good thing to say about Italy. Dude, I've been watching World Cups here since 1990. I mean, I lived in America since 86. I've been watching World Cups here since 1990. They've literally never had a good thing to say about Italy until they have no choice. Until Italy like reaches the semis or something, yeah, or does something like they did the
until
other day.
Until Cannavaro has the Spain. World Cup in his hand.
Until they beat Spain the other day or something. Like then all of a sudden, like, oh well, you know what? The four-time World Cup champions, Italians. Yeah, dickheads. They were four-time World Cup champions before they beat Spain the other day too. Yeah. Yeah. Like I would have an example. The way they were promoting
Roy Jones? Mm-hmm.
The way they were promoting this week, they were talking about and Saturday we might have a colossal clash.
The last
two World Cup champions might meet this Saturday, the Germany and Spain. What a colossal clash that might be. Like you couldn't put in a little tidbit and say, well, that's the case. It's Italy and Germany. It would still be two of the last three World Cup champions. Like, fact. Would you get like a knot in your throat and you couldn't say that part? Like, because is it that bad if you say two of the last three World Cup champions can also meet Saturday, or maybe the last two World Cup champions? Maybe a little respect.
You should call some soccer.
No, bro, that's the problem, bro. That's the problem. They start blowing people. They start becoming cheerleaders instead of actually watching the game. Just tell us what's going on, bro. And some of these, you know, they've got some nice tactical guys who talk about it and break it down. I just don't like the prediction, the whole hyping and predicting thing. Just call the shit, bro. Call the shit. You know what I'm saying? That's it.
The woman soccer player,
I remember the first...
Like, was it anybody surprised that USA lost 4-0 to Argentina? I wasn't.
No.
I wasn't.
No, but wait.
I wasn't at all, actually. I wasn't even remotely surprised.
The female soccer analyst in the very beginning of the tournament was like, you know, in this game, I favor Austria. They have a really good team. They're very strong. Like, they went and lost that next game. Like, they didn't make it out of the group. Like,
Austria always sucks,
bro. Where
were
you? Like, you were giving this analysis. You picked Austria.
I believe Austria
lost
to
Iceland.
Right. They tied with Hungary, or they lost to Hungary also?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, what the fuck is she saying? Were you just trying to sound like a genius that... If some fluke would happen and Austria would get out of the group, you look like a genius.
Who
hired
these people? Why can't you call soccer?
Listen, I'm not saying I'm a total expert or something, but I do think some common sense would be essential.
You like soccer more than boxing.
I do think.
It's less favoritism.
Just let the games play out. You know, break them down. Break down the tactics. Break down the lineups. You know. Break down all that and then just let the shit happen. You know,
Chris Berman's my cousin. I know they call that soccer. I'll reach out to him.
Reach you? Really?
Yeah.
Is he? I don't know. You know, like
the Berminator?
Huh? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I like the guys they have. I like Taylor Twellman and Michael Ballack. And I like the fact that they bring in guys
Company.
I like the guys that the fact they bring these foreign guys too. Like I like that they give that little flavor. I just don't like when it becomes a cheerleading session. You know what I mean? When they break down tactics, it's still great.
Right.
I don't like when
Why
it becomes
are the
a
Americans
cheerleading session. You know?
Cheering a Germany and Spain.
I hear Paul go, yes, when Thurman landed a punch. Right. I didn't hear that.
And it happens a lot. I remember Euro 2000. I remember, and this one, we didn't have it in the U.S., so we had ordered on pay-per-view the whole package. I remember my grandfather ordered the whole package. I remember Setanta Sports from England. We had it directly from them. And I remember France and Holland were in the same group early on in the tournament. And when they played each other in the first round, it was like, even the British guy was giving it. Oh, a dress rehearsal for the final, this one. A dress rehearsal for the final. Holland and France. Guess what happened, bro?
Disrespect.
Anytime anybody dress rehearsals anything, Italy eliminates somebody. What happened? Yep. It got to the semis and Italy eliminated Holland. And if it wasn't for the scumbag ref giving us 4 minutes injury time in the final, we would have beat France too in the final. I don't know where he got the 4 minutes from, but Sylvain Wiltord ties the game in the 94th minute, and then Trezeguet beats us on the golden goal in the finals. But obviously, clearly, Italy was also good. Everybody always forgets about Italy. Ironically, it's Trezeguet that misses the penalty kick 2006 World Cup final.
That's right.
And we win the World Cup. That's our show for this week, guys. Next week, we'll be celebrating Peter Cause's marriage, wedding, boom, whatever you want to call it. Are you going on your honeymoon or no? Are you going on your honeymoon?
We might go the week after.
The week after. So we'll be here. We'll be in studio.
Yes.
All right. And then when you go on your honeymoon, you got to call it in.
I might have to call it in too
because I might be in Miami. All right. We might be a double call in. That's what we might do. And hopefully, we'll be celebrating an Italian victory over Germany.
Za.
Boom. Have you any locksmith moves or no?
Listen, no?
Did you take Italy?
Yeah, of course I did.
You took it at plus what?
Plus 165.
That's what they were? Yeah. To advance?
Nice.
Yeah. My boy Rosario got them at plus 330, like when they first made the matchup. Mm. That's wild. Nope. That's wild. The odds makers knew better. They knew.
They knew.
They knew.
We're still the judges still on the show. Know. The show's still going.
The show's still going. Yeah, okay. Well, so we're off. So we're off. Till next week, we're off. We'll be back with episode 61. Hopefully, you guys keep
really
track.
Bad.
And we'll over and out next week. Later.